welcome one and all once again to a brand new Duel World in 2 weeks in a row. Must be some type of record. I'm joined this week by Martin.
Hello.
And the Dutch Sayer.
Hello, everybody.
Fresh off their trip to Gamescom 2015. And we are going to dedicate most of this episode to that. I mean, I guess everything, but I wanted to start off because it's the only thing I can actually talk about. Microsoft was the only one of the big three that had any type of presence as far as like a press event goes at this event. And that was Tuesday morning where they revealed the future of Xbox, the biggest and greatest lineup they've ever had. And to kind of set the mood, they already showed the same exact video they started E3 with. So that really got people going. I mean, it wasn't a show that was full of surprises.
I also wouldn't call it a terrible show.
Oh no, it wasn't a terrible show. But I was gonna say, like, they pretty much told us that we would see updates on Quantum Break, Scalebound, and Crackdown here, and those were really the three games they started off the show with. It's like, we promise you we're not gonna hold it out, so here it is. And
the problem was that then there was an hour of show left.
Yeah. Yeah, it was 90 minutes, and after the three games that they announced was going to be there and showed off, it's like, okay, and now you did the things you promised, and now what for next hour?
I thought it was an interesting approach to press conferences, because they did the opposite of what most people do. They started from the distance, and then they worked their way forward into more current-day stuff, and It's an interesting tactic. The only problem with it, it doesn't make an interesting press conference if you go from stuff we've never seen to stuff we've seen too often.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
to kind of non-announcements, like when they brought up Igarashi to talk about a new character.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good press conference. There was a lot of decent content. You know, we got, I think Quantum Break is really good. I've never been keen on games that have, like, actors. Like, oh, I know that guy. Because it's always going to be that guy from that thing to me.
Yeah.
And not
depending on who the actor is, yeah, totally. Some actors just have this one role, and you remember them by that one role for their entire career.
Or they're kind of, like, the main character is Iceman from the X-Men films. And I'm like, oh, it's Iceman. And that's all he's going to be to me. And then there was, like, evil cop dude from, like, everything. And then evil black cop dude from everything.
Mm-hmm.
If they would have found some good unknowns, maybe that would have helped. But that's a hard thing to do.
I don't know. It looked pretty decent cast. It's known actors, but not, like, you don't immediately know the name of them and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
It's still fun,
and
I think
that's kind of more distracting, because it's the same thing I kind of had with L.A. Noire, where you had J. Cole Phelps, and it's like, he's that actor from that thing. You don't know his name, but you know his face. So it's always like, yeah, I know that guy. I just don't know from where. I don't even remember the actor's name.
Mm.
But yeah, Scalebound was...
I thought Scalebound looked cool.
Yeah, it looked very interesting.
I thought it was kind of eh. Like, I guess I expect more from Platinum Games. I was expecting something crazy and over the top, and not necessarily just a straight action game with a dragon.
To me, it looked like open world RPG mixed with Monster Hunter.
Yeah, we'll see. But
the only annoying thing, which everyone mentioned, even like when we met a couple of other industry folks, like when we talked to Daniel Dwyer, like his first reaction was when we talked to him over the microphone, was like, man, the dialogue was terrible.
Like, atrocious.
It's whatever. It's not like I play video games for the style of writing.
Yeah, but the main character's also, like, he looks like the douchiest douchebag.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
putting
on
his headphones and...
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, that can change over time, but I imagine it's probably Platinum's version of what Microsoft wants their main character to be.
Mm.
Like the ultra hip white dude. And
possibly.
This is a Japanese version of that, where it's like, yeah, that's kind of a douche stereotype, so we're going with it.
Mm.
And Crackdown, I'm interested in. If they deliver on their promise, which I doubt, I'm extremely intrigued by the prospect of like this entire indestructible world with multiplayer.
Yeah, but on the one hand, I'm like, yeah, this destruction looked pretty impressive and stuff. But on the other hand, I was like, there's still not much game here.
Yeah, it kind of, like, they were explaining, I mean, so it's Crackdown, because, like, oh, you take down a network of terrorists or whatever, like, okay, so it's Crackdown, you just kind of go around killing stuff.
Yeah, which was fine back in 2008, when it cracked.
I think it was 2007.
2007, but now I would suspect a little bit more, hopefully.
Well, I mean, like, we'll see. It's still like a year out or whatever.
I mean, that was technically the problem of Crackdown 2. When Crackdown 2 came out, it was kind of just more of one. And by that time, the open world games, which had characters with superpowers, had way more stuff going on than Crackdown
had. Well, 2 had way more problems than being the same, but I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then most of the other stuff was kind of rehashes. I guess if you're excited for it, DVR is coming to the Xbox One for basic TV.
Yeah, you know, when TV showed up, I groaned loudly, like, Jesus Christ, you're going to talk about TV. The other moment for me was when that woman came on stage and said, man, I'm pumped for Windows 10.
I know, right?
And yeah, I just rolled my eyes and couldn't believe what I'm seeing.
I was at work, so when she said that, I'm like, okay, I have stuff to do away from my desk for like 10 minutes, so this is the perfect time to do it. It's like, it's like how WWE used to, well, they still kind of, when they used to schedule diva matches, and everybody used to say those are the bathroom breaks. This is kind of like the bathroom break for the press conference. It's like, okay, so I gotta go make coffee, I gotta go run talk to this person, and this is the time to do it.
Yeah, but not only the content, was also this woman like being like super excited about this new version of Windows.
Yeah.
Like, give me a break, lady.
Yeah.
Windows might be a pretty good Windows, but I'm not going out
Nobody's
of the way
so excited
to, like,
about it.
Schedule a day, like, man, day one Windows, baby. I'm there.
Yeah, so the big announcement, I guess, for this show was that Halo Wars 2 is coming out.
Yeah, it was an actual surprise.
Yeah. But on the other end, it was like, you sure about that, Microsoft? Because as far as I remember, the first one wasn't exactly a hit.
It was, yeah, I mean, it put the company out of business.
Yeah. So, I'm curious.
Yeah, very curious about it. Yeah, and also, from the people who played the original one, they said it played well on the 360.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad game or anything. It was actually really good. I never played the full game. I got to at least try it out. I thought it was a really well-made game. But it didn't set the world on fire. And this trailer was just basically CGI story. Well, not even really story. Like, mood setting, I would more say.
Yeah.
Stuff. I don't know. They have a good team with Creative Assembly, those guys know how to make strategy games, so that's good, and they have a pretty good template they can at least lift stuff from.
Yeah, so just doing this to expand more Halo story, I probably think they would have another venue that would be more suited for that than a Halo Wars 2, but
yeah.
We'll see.
I'm kind of like hoping like this will not be more than a rehash of them trying to do what the first one did, but maybe Creative Assembly will go in a bit of a different direction strategy game wise, because I mean they make quite different strategy games than back then the Age of Empires guys did. So that would be curious if it will actually be even different gameplay wise.
Earl, do you know if that actually was announced for Xbox One only, or also for Windows?
As far as I know, it was Xbox One, but...
Okay. Yeah, well, that would, I assume, influence their design, because, you know, having to to make it just for a gamepad is, of course, very different than having the option from putting out a mouse.
Sure, sure, but still, I mean, Creative Assembly has still made quite different strategy games, and they might think of something different for this title and then try to see how they apply that to the console.
Yeah, and personally speaking, I just don't care. So, once they announce it, I'm like, I can't even fake interest. I'm not gonna hate on it, but it does nothing for me.
Sense, me neither. But I'm still like, I have this morbid curiosity of like, what will the game actually be and why?
The why is easy because it has Halo on the brand, and yeah, I think that's all you needed.
Yeah, but that didn't help the first one.
No, it didn't. So I'm really curious as to why they brought it back. Other than like, when they were building it up, I was like, oh, are they doing like an ODST spinoff? Like they're gonna focus on that group of people now? Because they're like, oh, we're gonna continue a story that we didn't get to finish, and fans have been asking for. I'm like, oh, we're bringing back the ODSTs. It's like, no Halo Wars. I'm like, oh, okay, good on you. I don't care.
Yep. And not many people cared back then, so we will see.
Okay, so that's that. Is there anything else you folks want to mention with the Microsoft press conference?
I honestly barely remember the rest.
Yeah, I mean, the rest was, I mean, it's more Tomb Raider. It was, oh my gosh, that cringeworthy esports commentary for Halo 5.
Oh, right.
Jeez.
I also don't know who thought that was a great idea.
Well, they probably say esports is becoming a thing. We have a franchise we want, because they don't really have, you know, like Halo isn't huge into the esports scene as far as I know. Even though they've been trying that since, like, Reach, and it hasn't really taken off. Like, they have it in, like, 4, where you can do, like, they have, like, the esports playlist or whatever.
Well, why do you think it's necessary to showcase that aspect off on a...
On a stage? I have no idea.
Especially to the broad public, who's like, wait, so I have to play that way? Is that how these games go? I'm never going to have a chance. Maybe I shouldn't buy Halo.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I think it's a really weird way. If you want to talk about the esport aspect, I think it would have been way more interesting to talk about the feature set it has that facilitates esports, like... Talk about your spectator mode and improvements to that, and not this weird commentary bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't even like good esports commentary, or no? I mean, maybe I.
No,
it was just. Kind
of, no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't.
Yeah,
you had no idea what was going on.
If you're way into competitive Halo, it's just gabble to you.
And especially, it wasn't even a full match. Like, it was a highlight reel that was pre-recorded. So pre-recorded highlight reel, and you still had no idea what was going on. So, great.
That's their fault then, yeah.
Okay, so that will do it for the Microsoft press conference. Now you folks have to talk about all the wonderful games and companies you got to see at Gamescom. So, we went through this before we recorded, and you folks made it as the companies and games you saw. And you wanted to kick it off with Nintendo and Star Fox and Mario Maker.
I got to play through 2 missions of the new Star Fox, and... the thing that I came out of E3 when we talked about, I think the visuals of Star Fox still stands. It looks a bit barren, and they could probably have done more with it, but I mean, it still really invokes the look of the old games, but I still kind of wish they did a bit more.
Just more texture work, especially space stuff look actually better than planet stuff.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. I would agree. And the other thing is that you notice is, like, the basic gameplay is really still the same, which is great. But they made some...
weird decisions.
Let's say not good control decisions. I really didn't like the motion control thing. Even after 2 demos... basically playing the 2 levels, I don't think it's great. having to look down on your gamepad to then shoot stuff from above, because that's the only way you can look down and shoot. Especially because the gyro is on the whole time, so even if you just try to play the normal way, sometimes your reticle moves, and then you have to recenter that by pressing the left stick in, and that's just no good. That just makes this more complicated than it needs to be. And the other thing for me was, since the controllers these days are quite different, and the game has like a couple of other options, like the transforming stuff, which meant they put the rolls and stuff on the right stick, which was weird, because quickly flicking the right stick to do a sidewards roll is not as effective as just pressing like L or R buttons. And
usually that's where your camera is intuitively on a third person level.
Yeah.
So
and they have like now this on, for example, Z L, they had now this lock on thing going, so you can still track enemies that are behind you or something like that, instead of like, I would have much preferred if one of those buttons would let me do the rolls. It also being responsible for the boost, also weird. Like I said, I'd rather have that on a button. So yeah, that was the other control thing I had issues with. But I guess we will see how that shakes out. Maybe after you play it for longer, it will be fine. I don't know.
Yeah, for now, it just feels that they really needed something to show off the gamepad. Like, look, we finally have a game to show off with the gamepad, instead of creating the game and having been well implemented with the gamepad. It's the other way around.
Like, yeah,
we need something for the gamepad. Let's focus on Star Fox. Let's all make crazy kinds of efforts to show folks off. Like, listen up, we made a gamepad, and now it has a focus, and now it has a purpose. Instead of actually making a good Star Fox
which
game
first. Which is also the thing that I had problems with when, even every time when people asked Nintendo about when do we get a new Star Fox or F-Zero or something, we need to have like a unique idea for it to come back. So Star Fox, apparently the unique idea was to shoehorn all kind of gamepad shit in there, which turns out kind of necessary, because whenever I just got to play the normal stuff, it was still incredibly fun, and I'd rather have just that. But we will see once the full thing is out, I guess.
We shall. I mean, it's 3 months away?
I don't really know.
It's not a release date, but I assume it's the November title, since they don't really have any other titles.
But it was the winter, indeed. It's just like, they've been pretty sketchy with their release dates. They just announced it for the 3DS version of that the co-op Zelda game, just announced for October, so we'll see.
Yeah. And I know neither one of you got to play Xenoblade X, right?
Yes, I did.
Oh, he plays Xenoblade.
For 6 minutes, for my 80-hour game. I played four combat scenarios, and it looked great. Combat played well. There were voiceovers whenever they hit things, and I could jump really high. And
that's what I was curious about. Is it the English version yet? Because I feel like they still were showing off the Japanese version at E3.
No, this was the English version.
It was the English, yeah.
How was the voices?
And I had no dialogue, in the sense that I walked up to someone and had a true quest dialogue or anything. I just had some basic groans and single words from attacking an enemy.
But they get in and... Okay, never mind. This is all for me.
Yeah. ask away. That's fine. But I didn't actually experience... The thing is, that's the hard thing. Just like playing an MMO at a convention. Like, how are you going to judge that? It's like paying 5 to 6 minutes for something that's a 90-hour game.
It's like, yeah, it's really hard to demo RPGs. And, I mean, just to kind of jump around a bit, we didn't mention Square for good reason, but they had a Final Fantasy 15 event that a lot of people seem to have been turned off by.
They did? I guess we missed that. You would have to tell us.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't... basically, I guess they had, like, an event where they redesigned the city and pretty much told people we have no idea when this game's coming out. I mean, I think they've since backtracked then and kind of hinted at like 2016.
We were told next year.
Yeah.
By someone.
There seems to be some confusion with the auto release dates at this show, because it came out on one day like Horizon's New Dawn was coming out in 2017, and then like the next day they corrected it and said that it's aiming for 2016, but it might be delayed into 2017.
Yeah, depending on the Philippines.
And I'm like, that's pretty much every game.
Yeah.
Okay. I just know that people were, I don't know, because there's like a gaff thread, and it's like the Final Fantasy 15, I forget what it's called, and it's like CNN, Final Fantasy 15 Gamescom Active Time Report, CNN reporting an eye from disaster scene is the title of the thread now.
That's pretty funny.
But, okay, and you also saw Mario Maker.
So yep. I already played it for like an hour and 50 minutes at a post-Nintendo E3 event. Martin, you played it for the first time.
Yep.
So what do you want to say?
I can only say that what I played I really liked. I got to try some levels that were pre-created, and there was some really hard shit in there. So hard that I couldn't even get past the first screen, which is actually pretty cool. And I thought like the creation tools were very easy to get into, and you can do like some pretty funny stuff. Like I created a cannon that shot out tracking plants. So that's cool.
Yeah, basically, most of these games, the creation mode isn't that fun, and they actually made the creation part fun and easy to get in and out of, and easy to edit and easy to upload. They actually made it the way you want it to be made, and that's the positive thing about it. And it looks fantastic, and the sound design is great.
Okay. And just as a plug for not us, Nintendo put up a video of they had a Facebook hackathon last week or 2 weeks ago where they went to Facebook and employees there were able to make Mario levels. And that was kind of neat to just kind of see the behind the scenes stuff where they were able to show like how some people crafted the levels using like a graph paper and post-it notes and a whiteboard. And they kind of went all MacGyver on the scientific notions of a Mario game, but it's really cool because, and I could be wrong, but it looks messy. Like, you think you can only make a level that's pretty straightforward, but you can make multiple levels to that level, and you can make very fast and expansive Mario levels here.
You can string stuff together. So what it does, just like a Little Big Planet, there's basically a meter that shows how much you can put into a certain distance in the level, so the volume of stuff. Once that meter is filled, you can still make a door and a pipe to a new part of the level, and that meter goes down to zero again, so you can fill it up again on new screens. And you can do that a few times before you have to actually end the level. So it can be pretty big and expensive.
Yeah, which I was intrigued. Because I remember when they first showed it off, that was one of the concerns. Because they just showed the one screen. Yeah, and it was just the start and the finish. But yeah, it's very interesting. This game's out in about a month. A lot of people have issues with the date. 11th of September, as Nintendo points out, so you don't say September 11th.
Yeah.
So... there's that. Okay.
Any questions about Nintendo World, or you're fine?
Oh, I mean, what else did they have there? I mean, most of the games...
Everything was at E3.
Yeah, Yo-Kai Watch, the Zelda, Three Swords Adventures,
Was Freedom Force there? Or Federation Force?
Oh, no, that wasn't there.
No, but I played that at the post-E3 thing. What else was there? No, it's about it, I think.
Mario Tennis, but...
Oh, right, Mario Tennis, yeah. That was about it.
Wait, Mario Tennis?
Yeah.
Oh, right, that's going out for Wii U.
Wii U version, yeah.
I completely forgot that existed.
Yeah, that's...
So did
you and the rest.
People.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and I mean, just kind of, again, they didn't have a press conference, but they did seem to drop a bunch of news during the week. Xenoblade X is getting a special edition in Europe, I should say. They announced one for America, but they didn't give any details. Xenoblade Chronicles, the original one, is now on the Wii U's Virtual Console, or whatever that you want to call it, that one. What else did they say? Triforce Heroes got a release date of October 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the other thing with the Splatoon update came out this week. So those were their, kind of their announcements for this
week. Yeah, and the French developer who skips my name is going to make one or two levels in Mario Maker.
Oh,
it ships on the disc. Michel.
The three-man dude, yeah.
Ansel?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of nifty. It seems like there's going to be two things with that. There's going to be pre-made levels on the disc, which is really one of the things I wanted because I don't know how much I'll be into the creation, but it's awesome to kind of have new Mario stages in any
form. Especially in those old styles.
Yeah. It also seems like they are going to curate stages to give to you over... So I assume it's going to be like something like maybe once a week they'll give you like two or three new stages that they curated and figured... are good, and that was one of the things they said with the Facebook hackathon.
That's really smart.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and hopefully they'll highlight people, you know, from the community who actually put a lot of effort into it, and also hope that lots of famous other designers from other genres and other get highlighted on there. That would be great.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, maybe send it out to indie developers. And stuff like
that. Yeah, that would especially be great. Like, a good idea would be, like, here are three levels the Super Meat Boy guy has made, or something like that.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential for this. And we've seen that they've been pretty good at kind of supporting their games post-launch with Splatoon and Mario Kart and Smash Brothers. And Mario Maker seems even more keen to that because they don't have to do anything.
Yeah, it's community-driven.
Yeah.
As long as the infrastructure holds up, the community will give.
Yeah. And it gives you a reason to kind of go back to the game every week if it's going to make, okay, here's some new stages we're going to highlight. But let's move on because we got plenty of games and so little time. Next up was EA. Just as a brief aside, Martin has written about some of these games on the website. And for the most part, we're not going to double dip. So, what is it? Unravel,
and
Star Wars Battlefront, I've been reading about, and those you can check out on the website. I think we are going to talk about Guitar Hero, but that's in reference to Rock Band as well later on. But EA, Mirror's Edge, go.
So, Mirror's Edge, what we got to see was a pretty long demo, actually.
Gameplay demo, yeah.
Was
from
like 20 minutes or something. And it seems like they really took complaints from the first one to heart and did some stuff that I guess no one really expected. Like, they showed off the open world, like, that you can now explore the city on your own, find missions that way. You can create, like, waypoints, and when you create waypoints, then... But what I thought was really smart, like normal games would do, like an arrow or a line in the world and stuff like that, or put things on the radar. But what they do in the open world is what they did in the first game. Basically, once you do a waypoint, then parts of the world get painted in red, and that's basically your way to get to where you want to go in the world.
They don't have to follow that line, just their suggestion of being there the quickest, most efficient way to that waypoint.
Yeah, but I think that's a really smart way to do waypoints in an open world game like this. Apparently what we didn't see, but someone told us, is like you can even get down to ground level and see like people walking around and stuff like that. Yeah, and what they then saw was like Faith. What's her name? Faith, right?
Faith, yeah.
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 Faith infiltrating like in a building called Elysium. I think that's a corporation name.
Does she meet Matt Damon?
No, sadly not. And basically, she had to get in and try to hack into some computer to get information, how runners do, right? And they really pointed out how now Faith is just about the running and climbing and stuff, and you can do close quarters combat, but just hand-to-hand stuff, no weapons at all. The enemies might have weapons, but you can't even use them this time around.
Yeah, just like stun guns and that sort of stuff.
The cool thing is, I mean, that previously when you went into a level and you had to go somewhere, they very explicitly showed off the path in red all the time. This time, not so much. I think they talked about having like a runner's vision button, actually, so you just press it to activate it. And even then, like, the stuff doesn't stay red. Like, when you start climbing on the red stuff, the color disappears so that you can actually see how that level looks. So it's not like this weird clash of
red and environment colors. Yeah.
And the other thing is that we saw was like they went to parts of the level and then they said, okay, now this part is going to be an environmental puzzle. And what they mean by that is a more complex structure that you have to climb up in different, more complex ways, and you have to figure that out on your own. And during those, there is like barely even anything red, and they don't actually want that. That's specifically what I asked, so that it actually is something you have to figure out by yourself. That's not something they didn't do in the first game. If you had runner's vision on, you could turn it completely off, but if you had it on, you always had pathing there. But in these environmental puzzles, you actually have to figure it out on your own, and there is no help for that, which I think was pretty cool.
They specifically said that most of the environments, until you are at the environmental puzzles, you can climb your own way. So you can see with the runner vision, like, oh, that's red, that's where they probably need to go to. But you can find your own way inside of those buildings. It isn't limited towards what they say is the climbable wall.
And the other thing was the combat looked a bit more dynamic. Like, they had lots of new moves, like wall jump kicks, and you could, like, flip around a pole and then kick someone in the face that way, and all kinds of crazy stuff. So that looks also way more dynamic than what you could do in the first game.
What about the gunplay?
Like I said, there is no gunplay in this game.
Okay.
The enemies have guns, you can't use any.
But can you disarm them or anything again, or...?
There were, like, moves where you disarmed them, I think, yeah, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, you don't shoot anything.
Yeah, once you disable an enemy, they basically drop their thing that they had, even with a gun or a stun gun or something like that, and then it isn't like the fact that other guards will pick that up, it's just like, that's on the ground now, and you're done, you can move on.
Okay.
Yeah. Also, game looked quite stunning, to be honest. Really like the look of, love it. Oh, and they made sure to mention like things like that it doesn't have any loading times. Like, you get in from the open world into the building scenarios and stuff without ever encountering any loading. So that's also kind of cool.
Okay. Next up, I guess speaking of hiding in plain sight, we have Hitman, Agent 47, which is the name of the movie, which I don't know why I keep saying.
Martin, we should tell him that at the end. Anyway, tell him about the game.
So yeah, the really cool thing about this was, I mean, it wasn't a playable demo, but...
we had a long presentation.
We had a really long presentation in which they showed off a level where 47 had to take out a business mogul who was...
running a fashion show.
Running a fashion show, exactly. And what you immediately noticed was, like, this map was huge. It was, like, huge building, looked like an opera building or something. You had multiple entryways. You could approach the mission in different ways, like, stealthily... try to kill lots of people, try to not kill anyone, and all kinds of stuff. It looked really impressive. Also, lots of people in there and at all times in the mission. Specifically, we mentioned like also having every Hitman game had like people that were just basically part of the environment that didn't do anything, but also people that were really simulated and had like a schedule they had to go through and or specific actions they could do, right? And they said like in the last game it was like 50 to 60 actually simulate people per level. And in this one, particularly in this level, it was 120. So, and that really showed, because there were a lot more interesting interactions going on. Like, for example, right at the start of the level was a news reporter with a camera guy, and you could, like, listen to them, and they would do their TV thing, or you could walk in front of a camera, and then the reporter lady would be pissed off at you, and stuff like that. Also, they showed off lots of the options you have in a level like this. For example, at one point, Agent 47 had like the uniform of one of those butler dudes. No, it was... What was it? At least it was like...
Bellboy, something like that?
No, not bellboys. Mm. After the bellboy.
Oh.
I think it was just food delivery guys, right?
Yeah.
It was just food delivery guys. But the thing is, they had like these crates of food that needed to go upstairs, where I think our target actually is, or was, at some point at least. But before the stairs, there were two guards that would actually frisk you. So what 47 did was hide his gun in one of those crates and let one of the other food delivery guys actually pick it up, because they only frisked the body but didn't check the crates. And then yourself could get through there. And also, interesting thing, apparently frisking is now a mechanic. Like when you walk up to them, you could either press S to let them frisk you, which I mean, since he got rid of his gun, was fine. The other option actually would have been to do like a quick takedown and take these guys out in some way. So yeah, he let himself get frisked, then picked up the gun, and then continued from there. Also, they changed how disguises work, which was a huge complaint compared to the last game. Like the levels being really shitty. Another complaint was that when you disguise yourself, let's say, as a policeman, every other policeman would immediately know that you are not a policeman, which is super weird. And in this game, they have, like, guards that have, like, in the world, like, these triangles on top of them. They call them enforcers. Those are basically, like, upper-tier guards or people that are in charge. And they actually really know the stuff.
Everybody, they really know the stuff. And if you are a lower, if you dress yourself as a lower class staff member, and other lower class staff members are around you, they just think like, oh, you work with me, and only a supervisor would recognize that you aren't actually one of them.
Yeah, that makes this aspect of the stealth gameplay in Hitman actually really work again. And then they showed off the possibility of how to take out the guy, like, at the end of the fashion show. Apparently he walks out to the catwalk, and Agent 47 just put explosives into the scaffolding on top of it, and, well, that fell down and killed the guy, and that was the mission. It looked really nice. Like I said, they showed off lots of possibilities. That's really too much to break it all down, but if every level is of this quality in this new title, then we have one hell of a Hitman game on our hands. Like,
yeah, gonna get back to the good old days of Blood Money.
Yeah, exactly. So that's really, really promising.
And to get you really excited, there's a new movie coming out in theaters in just 2 weeks. So
they actually showed us
so
movie
once
trailer
the... Oh,
after the thing, and like, it's such a big deal that Fox is doing this movie, and look how awesome it is, and all I could think while watching the trailers. Jesus Christ, this movie looks like total garbage. Has barely anything to do with the game storyline, and boy, the special effects are bad.
Oh, God. Also, so it was a German trailer, so already voiceovers were atrocious, and lip syncing didn't even fit anyway.
It was terrible. And they even, like, and then they gave away tickets, and even tickets for a premiere, and they made sure to mention that you still had to pay your way to Berlin to actually see that premiere.
So which one of you two are going?
Neither.
We did participate
in this bullshit.
Yeah. I was zoning out at that point.
We were more angry that we couldn't leave immediately
after the gameplay
demo.
Yeah.
You should have gone. I'm trying to go. It looks interesting.
All I can see is Peter Quinn from Homeland.
Okay, so, let's see. Mirror's Edge, Hitman, now you're going into Devolver Digital and their squad of games. So, let's start off with this Hard West, because the name just sounds... It doesn't sound like anything.
Yeah, you go, Petrit, because you saw it as well, and I was at that point more tired than you were.
Yeah. So, Hard West is basically what the latest XCOM was in a Western setting. That's basically how you're supposed to see that.
In the weird West, though, because there's also supernatural stuff going on.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's not totally authentic Wild West, but it's mostly that setting. And so basically it's an overhead view. You control a main character. Do you know if he's anything special, Martin? Does he have any special relationship?
Characters.
Well, yeah, of course you play, but there is a highlighted main character.
Yeah, of course, you had, like, special abilities, like, one of the guys had, like, the ability to bounce bullets off objects in the world, so you could do, like, trick shots, like, fire a bullet at a pole, then let that deflect off another pole, and basically around the building, and then still hit a guy in the face, which was kind of awesome.
Yeah, the main mission they showed off was basically you needed to rescue a woman who had information about some sort of criminal gang, and they were coming to get her, and she was basically surrounded, so you needed to get those guys before they were at the building where she was. And just like in XCOM, you can move around and hide behind cover and get yourself into position and then attack the enemies. And then they had more, what I would say, were environmental puzzles. There were doors were closed, and, you know, with the trick shots, like Martin said, I think that the environment will play a larger role in that.
Yeah. And they also have optional mission objectives as well in there. Like the other mission he showed, you had to get into a bank, but you could make that easier if you took out the way to... Because that city had to deal with some demons, and you basically could, like... what was it? I think
The telegraph.
Oh, the telegraph, exactly.
Yeah.
Basically, to get in contact with the demons, and that way you could make the mission easier for you.
Yeah, because once you attacked the bank, the banker would gone out and cry for help, basically, with the deal he made with these demons. And if you disabled the telegraph, he can't call them as quickly. He still had the second option by going to the church and ring the church bell, but that would take longer.
Yeah.
So by preparing yourself in a mission, you can make it easier for yourself.
Yeah, and the other cool thing was how these special abilities actually worked, I thought. You don't just level up, but through gameplay you will earn, like, these playing cards. And there are 24 of them.
And they have all different kinds of skills on them.
Exactly. So one playing card, I don't know which card exactly it was, it might have been, like, the Ace of Diamonds or something. And that's then the, for example, that trick shot we talked about. Another card might be like double health for a character and stuff like that. And your character can be equipped with up to 5 cards. And the interesting thing is, despite having like these abilities on these cards, you can also build poker hands with these cards, because every ability is associated with a real playing card. So if you build hands, you can actually improve the abilities that are part of that hand. So that's also one thing you have to figure out when you fit out your characters. Like, do I want specifically these abilities, but then don't get any bonus, or do I maybe try to go for a specific combination, but then get these abilities in a way stronger form? But the interesting thing was that, unlike XCOM, they are very story focused. So they have lots of cutscenes, is what they told us. Lots of in-mission talk, and not actually this more non-scripted base building and stuff that XCOM has, right? So what they do in between is you basically travel the West. So after the mission, for example, you get like a couple of options of places you can go. And at these places, then sometimes right on the map, there will be like choose your own adventure style stuff. Like one example was they went to this... They went to this river, and then at the river they saw like a dead guy, and one guy in the party wanted to like check the body and see if he has anything useful. But in the world of Hard West, like stealing stuff from a dead person is considered bad luck. And then you had to make a decision: let that guy in the party do that or not. That might have consequences, might not have. Some of the party members actually might react in different ways to that, stuff like that, which I think is pretty cool to have like this more role-playing kind of thing combined with a tactical strategy game. One thing we forgot to mention, which I thought was a really cool mechanic for the combat missions, is before combat actually starts and people aren't really aware of you, you can't walk around. You have a heat level, and depending on what you do...
you can either blend in or immediately have suspicion on yourself.
Yeah, and even if someone is suspicious of you, you can like hold people up for some time. And that way let the other characters on that you have with you still... continue on, move around on the map, and basically you can kind of set yourself up in how you want to approach the situation you are in, which was pretty cool. I haven't seen that in games like this before.
Yeah, in XCOM, when you encounter an enemy, it's immediately a combat situation.
Yeah.
And here you can just walk around the map freely, see everything, maybe clear up some fog of war, and then go into combat.
Yeah, so this game looked really interesting, I thought, and it's apparently already out this fall.
Yeah.
So
they're trying to make this fall, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely coming out PC, Mac, Linux, I think.
Yes, yeah.
They're thinking about also bringing it to consoles.
Okay. And what's the other one called?
Ita. Ita, yeah. Ita was super cool. It's from a two-person British team, like... got to talk a lot to them and the influences. Like, the obvious influence is Dark Souls. Like, the game
talk about the game perspective, yeah.
The game had a trailer at E3, if you watch it, it has like a pixel art style, like top down. So it kind of looks like Diablo, but with pixel art, but it actually plays pretty much like Dark Souls. I mean, the right stick makes you lock on to enemies. R2 is
strong attack.
R1 was a light attack. L1 was
shield.
No, L2 was just picking up a shield. L1 was trying to parry. You could not roll but dodge. There's a run button. Attacks and running, of course, cost stamina. Like, when you think about Dark Souls, this is pretty much it. But like I said, from a top-down view, which still makes this play quite differently, especially since they have had like there were a couple of scenarios, especially where like they throw quite a lot of enemies at you. And this demo was the difficulty was turned down, as he told me, except for the final boss, which no one beat. I got into the last phase, but that's the farthest anyone has ever gotten.
During Gamescom, yeah.
During Gamescom, at least, yeah. And so, yeah, that was really fun to play. And I think just the look of the game is quite fantastic. They have such nice pixel work going on there with really nice animations. And also the scenario is really cool. It's like based on all on Northern mythology and stuff like that. You can be related to gods. Like you earn favor by killing enemies, and then you can use that favor to get, like, for example, like buffs from Thor and stuff like that. It's really cool. That's a game to look out for, I think. And that's also, like, coming to PC, Mac. They don't know about Linux and PS4.
Okay. What else do we have? Martin Zero Pet Project, Disney Infinity.
Yeah, checking out the Toys to Life games, as they're called.
That's the genre is.
Yeah. This year they had Disney Infinity 3.0 there, which is of course focused on Star Wars. We got to try both playsets. The old one was called, I think, Twilight of the Imperium, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the new one was called something. I don't.
Yeah.
Basically, the new one was like set between episode 2 and 3. That was very much focused on
the cartoon series.
The cartoon series stuff and lightsaber combat. And the combat was made by Ninja Fury. And that showed. I mean, the combat, while simple, was still really fun. You could do some crazy juggling stuff. I, at some point, put an enemy into the air,
jump after him,
then use my force pull to get other enemies up to me, and then continue killing them that way. So I never touched the ground and killed like 6 guys. Or something like that. It's pretty fun. It's really reminiscent of like Devil May Cry, to be honest. Of course, simpler, because it's still aimed at the younger audience, but if you know what you're doing, you can still have a lot of fun with that. So that was quite enjoyable. And the old Star Wars stuff was actually more focused on
vehicles.
So I got to play a Hoth level in which I flew around in speeders and took down AT-ATs.
Which one of you played this game?
Sorry, what?
I said, because he said give it for an order of thanks for you.
No, he has no patience with me, apparently. took down AT-ATs with you know, the court like you did in Shadows of the Empire, for example. And I also got to take down one on foot, which is pretty funny because you could like shoot down the armor and then underneath there was like, they have like brought back the concept of everything is actually made out of toys. So underneath the armor was just like blue plastic and you could see like a motor running that was basically moving this toy through the world, which is kind of cute. Or you could like expose buttons on the back of the AT-AT and destroy it that way because you kind of just turn it off. So that's kind of fun. The vehicle stuff actually controls quite nicely and it actually reminded me quite a bit of like Rogue Squadron controls when I like flew the X-wing through the Death Star. So that's pretty cool. And the other Disney Infinity thing I played was... the Inside Out playset, which was also interesting because they do something completely different with that one compared to any other playset they have done before. It's basically just a 2D platformer, so with some like puzzle elements. So each character had like different abilities, and you could switch between them. And for example, at one point I had to hit a button that would open up a gate, which would close down after some time. So I had to switch to, oh god, I haven't seen Inside Out, so I don't remember. There apparently was one character that was really fast in that movie. And
Inside Out?
Yeah.
Huh.
And
I don't think so. Maybe Bing Bong.
I don't remember. And then you switch to him and then hit the button and then you could run along. Or I had to get to a point where lava was, so I switched to anger and then I could go over the lava, for example. So yeah, that was actually pretty fun. I was quite surprised to see like just a 2D platformer, because before it was all like this Skylander-ish stuff, one would have to say. So that's quite the departure from them, but it's definitely interesting to see what now all the kind of different things that are now in this Disney Infinity package. And I also asked now if you could actually do like 2D levels and all this kind of stuff yourself in the toy box. He told me, yeah, you totally can. So that's pretty cool for people who want to do things like that.
Yeah, okay. They expanded the feature set a lot for the folks who truly want to dive in and basically create their own games out of the toy set.
Did you try out... I assume they didn't have an Animal Crossing Happy Home designer.
Nah.
Or what about Skylanders?
Yeah, I also played Skylanders, but they only had the online multiplayer there, because that's a new thing for Skylanders. They now have online multiplayer, and the online multiplayer basically is Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh, so it's only the racing mode that's online?
It looks like it.
Oh, okay. I guess that's... Because I was curious, because I know one of the big things has always kind of been keeping the toys separate. I was going to say, how do you do that if you have online? Because then you can just partner up with somebody who has the other toys.
Yeah. It looks like it, it will just be the online multiplayer. And so basically every racetrack has like a different theme. Like one is all about flying, so then you have a flying car. And of course you could choose which flying car you want by whichever car you have and put it on the portal. And one thing was a water track that I played, and again, you would choose your car by whatever toy you put on there, but it was actually pretty fun, I mean, having these online races. The interesting thing was we got to play with four people, and you still could have bots in there. I didn't really count the complete count of races in there, but I think it was around 10 or 12. Which seemed like a pretty good number. And I really liked how they had like special abilities per vehicle. Like, for example, when you had like the boat levels, you always could also dive underwater. So there was stuff over water and or under it. So sometimes you could have like item pickups. You see them under the surface, so you would have to dive down, or maybe ice is on the surface, and to get quicker, you could just drive around it, but it would probably be quicker to go underneath it, and if you're lucky, there might even be a speed boost, and stuff like that. Or you can also find some really crazy shortcuts. And the curious thing for me was that the items you pick up, like, they have, like, these blocks in the world, like, you know, from Mario Kart. Or, I don't know, did Diddy Kong Racing have blocks?
It had item...
had
I don't
balloons.
Know.
Balloons. Pickups.
Yeah, but
it was balloons, okay. But whatever, like that. But the thing is, you don't actually,
pick the items up and then use them when you want to use them, they get activated immediately. So, but it doesn't have like offensive pickups like shells or something like that in Mario Kart, because your vehicle can actually shoot at any point as long as the energy of your vehicle is full, because on the race tracks there's also like energy all over the place that you can use to replenish your weapon, and you have to hit someone a couple of times and then they would spin out. So that's how that works. And the items, like I said, activate immediately, and they can be like stuff like a shield, speed boost, or whatever their lightning equivalent was. I don't quite remember what it was, but you were definitely slowed down. Everyone was slowed down except the person that actually picked it up. So yeah, actually, I was quite impressed with it. It seems to be quite feature-rich, to be honest. And of course, this stuff will also be playable single player, not just for online, but that's the thing that's also playable online. So, it seems cool, I guess, for people that are still into Skylanders, that seems like quite the big addition.
Okay. I'm curious, I mean, it's another set of things for them to sell,
yep,
and to drive parents nuts, but if it works, it works.
That's true.
Okay. Then we have you folks tested out some VR stuff.
Yeah, Petri, talk about, well, we were at Ubisoft, we didn't have like appointments at Sony or Oculus or something, but Ubisoft had like two VR demos going. I guess I'll just start and then Petri can talk about his Oculus demo. The Morpheus demo, first let's talk about the headset. It was really comfortable. I thought it was more comfortable than the Oculus thing I tried last year. What would you say compared to the kit you tried this year, Petrit?
Yeah, of course, it's a completely different design. And it's the Oculus is basically the consumer version, the new version that's going to be released, is basically far more resemblant towards how Morpheus is going to be than the old Oculus. Because you put it on like a baseball cap, and then then it sits on top of your head instead of basically having the ski goggle effect. And then what you do is you adjust the screen instead of adjust yourself towards the headset. So you put it on more closely to your face or more distance from your face. And that's actually the only part that moves from it. The thing itself just sits firm on your head, and then the only thing you move is the screen towards you or further away from you.
So, and the Morpheus demo we actually got to play was, of course, Trackmania Turbo. And I have to say, like, the Morpheus has, like, quality wise, the 3D effect and everything. I don't think that thing was basically on the same level as Oculus. I didn't feel like those two different headsets are, like, better or worse compared to each other. They are pretty much equal. What I thought was cool was Trackmania Turbo apparently already was running at 60 frames per second, even in VR. So that made playing that quite nice, and it still looked pretty good, I thought. Didn't seem like they had to turn down the graphics too much or anything. And like I said, the 3D effect was really good, especially when you were driving in first person. Patrice couldn't do that, so he had to drive in third.
Not because I got sick of it, but the thing is, in third person with a car, you can't actually see the wheel distance. So I hit the wall left and right all the time because I couldn't see how much space I got inside the track to not be able to hit the side. So I switched to third person, and I could at least see how wide the car was in comparison to the road.
Yeah, but what you can actually do when you play that game in first person is you can still move. You can actually move your head, and then you can like see the nose of the car or look to the sides and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so that was pretty cool. And you notice how much of a difference VR makes
when you get to the end of that demo, because the end was like a huge 100-meter-high jump into the finish line, and I did get hell of a vertigo effect. I really felt that jump in my stomach. Like, I was on the verge of getting this sick feeling of when you're like, man, this is not going to end up good if this goes on much longer. So the VR in this was really quite effective.
Yeah, it was a really fantastic end job. You know, you already had some loops and some fast lanes, and then you go up, 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 and then just the road just stops and you plummet down.
Yeah.
Okay. we're going to start picking up the speed a bit with some of these. We're over an hour.
Yeah.
There's a ton of games to go.
Just quickly mention, they had two prototypes themselves with the Oculus DK2 kit, and one where you flow basically eagles from a first person perspective. So the only thing you saw was from the eagle's eyes, and you saw his beak, and then you had to fly, and basically it was a mini game capture the flag in a Assassin's Creed Unity, basically simplified version of Paris. You could fly just by tilting your head and collect basically lights of beams, which they counted as capture the flag.
Yeah, the developer told me that was basically just for them to try to figure out how to do VR as a communal thing, like in a multiplayer scenario that can still be pretty fast and not make people sick.
Just a cool experience.
Yeah. And the other thing was for you was basically the beginning of Far Cry 3 in VR. Like the VAS speak.
Okay.
Let's move on, yeah.
Destiny, new update.
Yeah, that I can also do pretty quickly. What I got to play was a single player mission from The Taken King. And what you immediately noticed when playing this, this felt way more like a Halo level. It started out with you being on a planet, and then these enemies you fought beforehand were like dying and crawling around on the ground, and you were wondering what the fuck is going on here, and then you get into this base and shit is crashing down. We get some real cool scripted sequences. And then, of course, Oryx shows up, and he's angry because you killed his son in the first expansion. And that's basically the beginning of the story. I also played Titan, so I got to try out the new subclass, in which you, when you activate it, you get like this flaming hammer that you can throw around and basically instant kill people, which is a pretty cool ability to have for a Titan, I have to say. Especially against now way more shielded enemies. Really fun. It seems like they really listen to people that they want more Halo-like storytelling in their story stuff in mission design. And it looks like the Taken King will actually deliver that.
Okay. Guitar Hero and Rock Band 4.
Yeah, let's first do Guitar Hero then.
Yeah, Guitar Hero, I was quite impressed by how much the gameplay changes just by
Moving the buttons.
Like, you no longer have the four buttons. You've been used to having four buttons for years now. And now you basically have two rows of three buttons.
That are on top of each other.
Yeah, they are on top of each other, and on the highway it's basically like, I think it was the black ones were pointing up, and the white ones were pointing down, so that way you can easily tell which you actually have to press. I even had some trouble. I mean, I thought, like, I've been playing these kinds of games for years, so I should probably try Advanced, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't handle it. It was really took some time getting used to. Even then, going back to regular, it was still in parts a struggle. So you really have to relearn the stuff. But I would say that's part of the fun. I mean, if it was just completely the same, I don't know if that would be great. And the other thing that really impressed me was the Guitar Hero TV thing. Which I talk about in the article, where you can just Basically, they will have hundreds of songs in different channels. And that just means the music videos will play on your TV. And then at any point, you can just press a button on your guitar and jump right into the song wherever it is. So, for example, in a party scenario, you can have it playing for the music. And if people actually want to play it, they can just go over, pick up a guitar, and start playing immediately. And it actually works with up to two guitars, and one person can also sing. And the stations will be themed, like if you just want, for example, they will probably have like a classic rock station, or one station that has more poppy music and stuff like that. So I thought that was really clever, and it basically means you have like infinite, or at least a lot of songs you can play for free without ever spending money, because
the entire life thing doesn't cost anything. Yeah, completely free, no DLC, nothing paid, at least for now, but the developer really emphasized that. It's like the entirety of the no subscription, nothing.
So yeah.
Yeah, and the build quality of the guitars is way better than before from Guitar Hero. Like, felt way less plasticky, way more sensitive, and just better build quality in general.
Yeah, I probably like that guitar more than the new guitar that Rock Band 4 has.
So yeah, let's switch to that then, Rock Band 4.
Yeah, the new thing for Rock Band 4 was basically, they still have the same guitar, and the new thing for them, the most important thing, is the freestyle guitar. So now when a guitar solo happens in a song, you can choose to play the song as before, like just play the guitar solo, or you can choose to play the freestyle solo. And when the solo happens, there are still things going on the screen. They have like new visual cues for you, like they are like complete freestyle things. Then there are lines in different spaces that could tell you how fast you have to strum. At those moments, you can do whatever you want with the buttons, and you just have to match with how fast you strum. Then they have parts in which you just have to tap buttons, but you can tap them freely. What you want is just important that you actually tap buttons. Then they sometimes want you to play single notes. Again, you can play whichever note you want. Or they want you to play chords, so at least play two buttons at once, but again, the combination is up to you, and then they switch that up in telling you that they want you to play either high or low notes. The cool thing is like that it actually works, that you play what you want. Whatever you want to play is actually in key and always fits into the song. So I actually got to play a pretty cool solo, I thought, during that one Pantera song. So you can make that stuff sound like a real song, a solo you would hear during one of these songs.
Depending on the song, it's long or short, and if it's really short in a well-known song, they sometimes loop it a little bit more, but it always fits.
Yeah. Petri, how did you like that part?
I really liked it. The only thing that was a little confusing is what they do in the... So, you, like Martin said, you got a freestyle, which you can basically do whatever you want, but if sometimes there were also visual cues that you hit, you had blue and orange, and what they did, of course, in their guitar, you got top all of the, so the yellow, blue, what is it, green and orange buttons are on the top and on the bottom of the guitar. But what they do in the freestyle mode is basically that those two rows, the entire upper row is blue and the entire lower row is orange, and they didn't actually cue that up quite well virtually on the screen. So what I thought is you actually hit the blue button on top and the orange button on the bottom, but you can actually choose any key you want, so it's far easier to go full out and make it actually more of a fun experience than actually having to hit certain buttons.
For me, though, after having played Guitar Hero and this new Rock Band, I thought I would be way more into Rock Band because I really liked the previous Rock Bands. But to be honest, I don't know if I think, like, the freestyle mode is enough for me. I think it's cool and fun, but I think what Guitar Hero is doing with basically having free DLC and having a guitar that's quite different, so you actually have to learn something new and have new ways to play. Because on higher levels, it actually means you really doing some nice chord combinations. I think that seems like the more interesting game to me at this point.
Yeah, and since I have a lot of legacy DLC for Rock Band, I'm going to stick with Rock Band. But yeah, the guitar stuff is interesting because it's new and because of the position of your hands. You completely have to relearn the entire game.
Okay, let's see, Mighty Number 9, which before you folks talk about it, we did get an announcement, we mentioned this last week. It was officially confirmed that it has been pushed to 2016, they didn't say when in 2016, and that the single-player game is mostly finished. The reason they're in it is some type of bug with the multiplayer.
Yeah, so there's a story out there with an interview with the producer, and I spoke to that same producer, played the game for about 30 minutes, and yeah, the game essentially looked... In my experience, it's actually they're telling the truth. You know, all the levels we're in, weapons were in, all of the animations were done, dialogue was in, voiceover was in. Like, everything looked basically done. Yeah, there were some minor things still on, some things clipped, you know, those kinds of stuff. But all of the attacks, everything was in, you know, it played fine. Played like Mega Man X, you know, you dash to, you stun enemies with your weapons, and then you dash to kill them, and level design was actually pretty great for the levels that I chose, like two, three levels. Bosses were pretty inventive. Yeah, it was just fun thing to play. It looked like a finished product that they could have released in September, but yeah, if they had some nasty bugs in the multiplayer side, which of course, presumably because they had Nasty Box, they didn't have any multiplayer showable there. Yeah, I would just assume that most people want a true finished product for their backing. So their delay is, you know, not something that fans want. But in the end, a good finished product is, I think, more important than this September release date.
Okay.
It played well.
Speaking of something that played well... Homefront Evolution, the game that still exists, apparently.
Yeah, so I got to play Homefront Revolution, which has quite a troubled history at this point. Remind me, did they say when it's coming out?
No. Just I noticed that there's a beta coming at the end of the year.
Okay, beta already the end of this year. Okay, that's interesting, because what I played felt like... super early. The build, I think I had to play on three different stations because it crashed so often. And the thing for me was, it played like a poor man's Far Cry 3. So they had like this thing starting out with you being on a mission with some resistance members. And having to take out an observation station or something like that. And basically I was just, doing the stuff you do in an open world shooter, like flanking guys, shooting them. I once activated some flaming barrels, so basically a trap I found. That was something new, I guess. That was it. That was my combat scenario. Then I moved on to get on a bike and basically actually reach the spot where I had to do like this real simple hacking thing. And that was kind of it. Then they said like, yeah, here's the open world, but all you could actually do was just find more of these... observation stations and then do the same hacking thing at the end. So I wasn't particularly impressed with what I saw, to be honest. The open world stuff already seemed tedious. The hacking was incredibly simple, and the shooting just felt off. It just didn't feel very precise. So, yeah, it didn't really come. The whole thing didn't really come off well in this demo we got to try.
Not surprising. It's one of those weird games. They picked it up when it was in development, and I guess it didn't make any sense to cancel it. But it's been in development for a while, and it's not a game that a lot of people are fond of, the first one.
No,
it really, really curious why they picked that title. Yeah, presumably because of the brand name, but why pick
but
a brand name?
But that's a toxic brand name.
Yeah, why pick up that brand name when you can easily, you know, the setting is a little bit different enough from the previous one. It is a direct sequel, but still, they could have branded it differently, and then people wouldn't associate it from themselves with Home, with the first Homefront, so... Still strange why they're calling it that, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't?
Okay, Overwatch?
Yeah, Overwatch is... Well, maybe I should go, because the demo was in German. So, Petrit and I got to play some Overwatch, the new Blizzard game, which, when you saw it, it kind of plays like what you expect. It basically is TF2, but with more, Team Fortress 2, I mean, but with more different characters. So, the characters... In a way, felt like they fell out of a MOBA in a sense that they even have
definitely.
Like different classes like attackers, defenders, tanks and stuff like that, and each of them had different abilities. But
different
then
weapons.
What you actually play was basically Team Fortress. One team was attacking, trying to take points, and the other one was defending. And I didn't come away super impressed with it. It felt kind of standard, and it's Blizzard, so it felt very polished, but I don't know if in this space that's going to be enough, since you already have polished alternatives. Like in other space, like when Blizzard came out with Hearthstone, there wasn't really an as polished experience as that card game. I don't know if Overwatch will get anyone away from Team Fortress 2, for example. But, Petrit, I don't know what you thought of it.
Yeah, I really thought that it played fine, it looked fine, sounded okay, but was really hard to get back to. The other team was pretty much dominating, and you spawned far away from the point where the action was, so basically it felt like died, spawned back, running towards it, and then died there again. Of course, it's also just because I'm bad at it, but it also felt like the movement speed, we talked about it afterwards, like, did you feel that it was slow yet?
Yeah,
the
basic movement speed felt very slow, so when you died, which had, like, a timer, and then getting back into action took, for me, like, way too long, and I felt like, for the kind of game it is, it felt like way too much downtime.
And the classes themselves looked fun, and it's all well animated, and yeah, like when I said polish on it, it's great, but... I'm not so sure, outside of just fans of Blizzard games, I'm not sure if anyone wants to come over from Team Fortress 2 or those kinds of games to come and play this, even for the competitive side.
Yeah, unlike Heroes of the Storm, I don't think it does enough to differentiate itself.
Okay, moving on. I can't imagine you have too many good things to say about this, but WWE 2K16.
It looked a lot like WWE 2K15.
It looks like WWE 2K14 and 13.
Like, they really talked up about, like, we did all this stuff with this game. Like, last year's game was a great foundation, and now we are really building it up, but it really felt like bullet points and not much actually gameplay changes. Like, they have like more creation stuff in there now. You can now create divas, you can create belts, arenas, but still no creative story, which is probably what most people actually really, really want. Especially if you like VGCW.
Yeah, especially if it's VGCW, it's so popular, yeah.
And the other thing was, yeah, they now have lots of characters in it. Great.
The biggest roster in a WWE game ever.
Yeah, great.
yeah, that doesn't say anything. It's just, I mean, especially when the roster itself looks best that people care about right now.
Yeah, and they still have the grappling system in there. They said it's improved, but since I didn't actually get to play it myself, I don't know, it kind of looked the same to me. At least it didn't run in slow motion, so that's something. because that was a thing that often happened when you got into grappling, that the game felt like it's actually running in slow motion. They didn't say anything about Showcase, because that's apparently a later reveal, so we don't know yet what that will be all about. And yeah, otherwise it was just lots of bullet points, and I can't really say that I'm at this point super impressed with it. So yeah, more of the same, I guess.
Yeah, and that's disappointing, especially since they now have a few years on the current gen, and they should have at least, you know, improved much more over this time.
Yeah.
So, what's up next? Let's see. So, I'll talk a little bit of Battleborn. Yeah, so that's the Gearbox new franchise. Well, franchise, at least for now, new game. And it's more of what they showed at the E3. Played about 25 minutes of co-op mission. We finished it in about 18 minutes. We were the first team who beat it at Gamescom in such a quick time. It wasn't actually that much of a challenge. We played with five players, and you could choose from lots of different characters. It felt really like Borderlands, all different characters, different abilities, different types of weapons. Most of the weapons are with one character, so it's not like Borderlands, you're picking up different characters or can exchange with other types of characters. You basically have your main gun with that character, and that's it. And they really emphasize on the fact that you want to play this game multiple times, or of course in the versus multiplayer want to switch it up, because every character is completely different. Art style, to me, looks still great. I like that kind of art style, that little bit of cartoony, but still having some realistic elements, but more reliant on the shell shading cartoony. I really like that. Played fluently, and co-op was really fun. You know, lots of loot also. Skill tree looked great. We'll see. The only aspect that, yeah, we talked about it with Martin afterwards, the only aspect is the versus play is not really something that the Borderlands crowd is looking for, and I'm not sure if that's actually something we will see how that turns out. But just the co-op campaign stuff was a great fun.
Okay, I have no idea what game you folks are talking about, so I'm just going to enter. What game are we talking about?
Oh, Battleborn, sorry.
Okay, so that gives us Mafia 3.
Yeah,
Mafia 3 was probably, I guess, the biggest reveal at Gamescom.
In terms of AAA, yeah.
The public got to see that render video of the guy
driving
through New Orleans during the night, talking about family and what family means to that mobster, and then in the end killing him and throwing him in front of the alligators or crocodiles, I'm not quite sure. And we then after that actually got to see like pretty long gameplay demo, and well, Mafia 3 still an open world game, of course, but the big it felt quite different from the previous games, which shouldn't be too surprising because it's actually not the same developer. The previous games were developed in Czechoslovakia by, I think at this point they were just called 2K Czech.
Yeah.
But this is developed by Hangar 13, new team out in California, which apparently has a bunch of ex-irrational guys. So people who actually worked on Bioshock, for example. And so that game immediately felt very different. When you went in the previous games in open world, the open world was flavorful, let's say, but there wasn't much to do in Mafia.
Yeah,
in the
Mafia 2,
games.
The open world was there for the atmosphere, not for
like
GTA,
yeah.
All kinds of things to
and
do.
In this game, it felt immediately like they took a bunch of pages from GTA, because this world felt very lived, and there were tons of characters walking around, having their own conversations. Like, there was interesting stuff happening, like drug deals going on and all kinds of stuff. So that was really cool, I thought. It really gives a really nice atmosphere to the whole thing. And also the way the story and it's kind of gameplay works together is like you're playing actually this time a black character who came back from Vietnam, got involved with a black mob in New Orleans, which then got attacked by the Italian mob, and you're basically the only surviving guy. And you now want revenge, take back the city, and build up your own family. But that's why the trailer that was talking about family, it's not just about name, it's about what you do. So you basically get your three lieutenants together and try to build up a new family and try to take back the city. And what we saw was we wanted to get information of where a drug den was located in New Orleans, led by the Italian mob. So for that, we needed to get first information of where the drug den is even located. So for that, we went to, what was it? Cemetery, I think.
Cemetery,
right?
Yeah,
it was a cemetery. And there were like
drug deals were going on.
Yeah, looking for drug deals, actually. And then we heard some conversation about some dude who apparently knows the guy who's in charge of the drug den. So then a firefight brought out, like, and that was like third person shooter ish, like
looked very Uncharted.
Could get in cover. Yeah, that's a big deal. It actually looked like it played really well. Like the shooting looked snappy. There was a bunch of Uncharted-like close combat stuff that you can do. You can just run into enemies, throw them to the ground, and then execute them, or get into a fist fight and then finish them off at close range. And the kills were super brutal. Like, when you shoot someone with a shotgun at close range, they just fly off 5 feet or something like that. Well, more like 5 meters. We're actually really far away. but yeah, you got into a shooting scenario, and then
the guy escapes.
The guy was running away into a car, but you were fast enough to catch up to him, punch him in the face, and then you basically took control of his car, and then it turned into a car into interrogation, which was pretty cool. Like you know from GTA, when you have to make your passenger afraid of what's going on, so they actually tell you what's going on. That's actually what happened then. So, and it seems like a couple of things could have happened. I assume he could probably also have gotten away, and then you would have had to actually chase him down. Because they had later on something that pops up, but I will get to that later. So yeah, you get your information of where the den is. He executed the guy, threw him out of the car.
Then the cops were still behind you.
Yeah, the problem was a cop actually notices you executing the guy. So then you had to escape from the cops, which they used to show off how you can use your lieutenants. All the lieutenants have, like, special abilities. So he got to a payphone and called one of his lieutenants who was able to basically bribe the cops, and that way he could get away from them. Then he went over to the drug den, and the cool thing is you have different ways you could approach the drug den. You could just go in guns blazing,
There's another way you could, if you had a boat, you could have gone in by boat because part of it is underground, and then you would have gone in through like
the channels.
The channels
underneath the dragon.
And the other possibility that they showed is like, let's try stealth. So and the cool thing is they actually stealthed the whole thing through. They basically went in, hid behind walls. Like drag people and knife them and stuff like that. Really cool. Again, super brutal kills, I have to say. And then we actually got to the boss of the drug den, and then he just pulled his gun, shot him, and then fought his way out. And that's basically how he took the drug den. And then from now on, that's yours. You could then set which lieutenant of yours you want to be in charge of that drug den, which gives you different benefits. Basically, you could improve from one lieutenant, I think, for sniper ability, for example, because you can also use lieutenants to, for example, get a sniper into a mission if you want a sniper in, or like hire brawlers that go in with you in with the missions. For example, if you want to go in Guns Blazing, maybe you want to hire some brawlers and go in that way. Stuff like that. So there seems to be a lot of variety. The cool thing was that after you've actually done the mission and had control of the drug den, these Italians, they didn't take too lightly to that. Actually, then a pop-up appeared. Retaliation. And basically what happened was you were just driving around, but then an Italian mob appeared and tried to drive by you. And then like a huge combat scenario broke out and you had to get rid of the Italians that wanted to take you out because you got control of a drug den. So it seems like with the interrogation earlier, that there will be some dynamic stuff happening either during missions or outside of missions. That seems pretty interesting, and it also looked pretty cool how freeform you can go about actually trying to take control of the city. So I was really impressed with this demo. This looks like it could be quite the cool game.
Yeah, especially okay. I have to say that the period piece in 1968 and also how effective in this demo the music was during driving in the car, having certain songs come up at just the right time. Of course, it's a controlled demo, so they do that. But still, it was very effective to put you in that mood and that setting. And before they started up the demo, they actually mentioned the fact that what they feel Mafia is basically period piece and character development are two things that are authentic towards Mafia, towards every game, even though sometimes it's made by different developers or has different area setting. It's still those two aspects for them are the most important to want to showcase, and that really came about through the music and through the setting and through the age period.
Yep.
Okay. What else do we have? Just two more games, and then we can call it a day. Well, three more, but I guess we can skip City Skylines for right now.
Yeah, that's fine. New expansion coming. Looks cool.
Yeah, After Dark.
Yeah, it's what it's called.
Do you want to talk about After Dark now?
No, that's the game. City Skylines After Dark.
Oh, right.
That's the name of the expansion.
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Okay, then that leaves us with, what is it, Star East? Or?
Stellaris. Which is the newly announced game from Paradox. It's helmed by the director who was responsible for Crusader Kings 2, which kind of is the game which put Paradox and their grand strategy games on the map for a lot of people because of some interesting mechanics. And the cool thing is what they are doing with Stellaris is they are basically taking the engine they have and they are building a F4X game out of that. So you basically have like the usual thing, you start with one planet, you develop technology, you can use different kinds of population to do different things on your planet, you build buildings, you can build star fleets and stuff like that. But because they have this grand strategy thing going on, it all runs in real time, because that's what they do, which is interesting for this kind of game. They have actually a possibility to build ships, so you can design ships yourself, and what they do. They also have way more comprehensive mechanics when it comes to politics, because they basically, it looks like they took all that kind of stuff over from Crusader Kings and Europa Universalis. Because, for example, you can like declare war on any other nation. It's racist, but you can like ravage their planets. But the thing is, if you don't have a claim to actually take their planets, then you can't. So that's a way they try to make this game more approachable, actually, than the grand strategy games. It gets bigger over time, but like I said, they start you with just one planet, and you can only build so much per planet because everything is upkeep. So that makes it less micromanage heavy than some of the other games have been, but it still has this very deep mechanics going on, and in unlike the other games, it's not historical, but in sci-fi, which I mean for some people is probably more fun. So that looked like quite the cool game. I'm very much into like 4X games. Played a lot of Endless Space, for example, and having this in real time with these more complex politics stuff going on, because let's be honest, the politics are usually the main complaint of 4X game, or even civilization games, like and Civilization is pretty good about the politics, but it still feels often very simple, and having like this going on seems pretty cool. But unlike those games, they don't have like multiple ending conditions. Usually you can basically just play for as long you want, or currently, the only win condition is like if you own the whole galaxy, basically.
But it's still early in development, so
yeah, it's still really early. Still really early. Also interesting is, of course, the galaxy is randomly generated. But what's really cool was that all the races you encounter are also procedurally generated. So they have a couple of looks and traits and stuff like that for the different races, so you probably never see the same races twice, and that's also pretty cool. And when you start out, you can basically create your own race and what it's all about, what are their ethics, and that gives you different benefits, like are they more militarized or are they more peaceful, and then you get like benefits for building stuff, or for example, probably like benefits for building military units faster or stuff like that. So it looked really cool, and I'm really looking forward to it. We couldn't even say when it's really coming out, but he said probably next year. And that will be PC, Mac, Linux.
So is that it? Is there anything that is biting, growling at you that you need to get out about Gamescom before we wrap up for this week?
Games-wise, that was pretty much it.
Yeah, we could always...
Like always, when you go to these shows, you know actually less about the show than staying at home and following all the news.
Yes, and I wanted to bring that up real quick, just because I wanted to pick on it a bit. Did you folks see the screenshots for the new Tony Hawk game?
Yes, that's actually something we did see. Like, but they now have, like,
cell shading?
Cell shading going on, or something.
That's what they'd say.
Yeah.
And it just looks like the characters are pasted onto the background.
Yeah, that's what the screenshot looked like that I saw, yeah. I don't know, apparently there were more than enough complaints that the game kind of looks bad, and that was their solution to try to
make
it
worse?
Yeah.
I don't know. We sadly didn't get to see Tony Hawk. I don't even know if it was there, to be honest.
It was there, but yeah, just schedule was full.
Yeah, schedule was full, and yeah. If you go to these events, I'm just going to say, they are really tiring.
They're probably
worse if you don't have appointments like we do.
Or probably better. It depends.
I don't know. Because if you like standing in line.
At the same time, you don't have a strict schedule. You can take a break where you folks are pretty much running from point A to point B.
Yeah, kind of. I'm feeling my legs today, I have to say.
Yeah.
They feel like I've done the marathon.
We shall see how well it goes. I don't expect anything major, we'll see, but I'm going to PAX Prime in like 3 weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
So that should be interesting. I don't know. We'll see if Daniel's going to Eurogamer. I doubt it, though. Anyhow, that will do it for Gamescom 2015. So many games, so many comms. So for these two, who I'm just exhausted listening to them, so I can't even remember their names.
Come on. Martin, that's fair.
Sure, if that's what you're going by. So yeah, also, be sure to check out their pictures on their respective Twitter, which is at the Dutch Sayer.
Right.
And at Santar?
Sater.
Sater. One of these days.
2K.
2K, because he got rid of his underscore. Yes, they took very different pitches all week. One of you looks really excited to be there, and the other one's Martin.
I was very excited, but he took always pictures of me when I'm actually trying to play the demo or something.
You have the most intense game face I've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm like super focused on the games, trying to get as much out of these demos as possible. And he's like fooling around, trying to take pictures while playing Dark Souls. Well, I'm like, I need to see as much as possible from this. Because
and he's playing the same game, and he has like this giant smile on his face and a thumbs up, and you're just like
I'm busy playing.
It wasn't even that one. There was a picture beforehand, which we posted on the Dual World and Twitter account, which you can check out, where you just have like this face where you want to kill the video game.
That was me playing Star Fox. So
yes, struggling with the controls.
Take that how you want.
So yes, check those out, and we'll be back sometime soon with a brand new Dual World. So have a great week.
Thanks again, everybody. Bye-bye.